On with more reaction to the Masters, let's welcome in Golf Channel senior writer Rex Hoggard and Gary Williams, host of Five Clubs. G-Dub, I want to start with you. Rory leaning on Jack Nicklaus and Tom Watson. I know that has to warm the cockles of your heart.
Yeah, it was great listening to you guys talk about what he shared yesterday, about a moment with Tom Watson 17 years ago. And if you think about that, it amplifies why the Masters is what it is, that it's this annualized major championship where it is not just the people who go there every year, the people who watch it every year. It's the players who have the good fortune to be eligible, invited, and exempt to play in it. So when you go back to someone like Rory, who has this opportunity with Tom Watson, it's not just an opportunity to play a practice round with him. He then banks something. And then he leans on that moment 17 years later with a one-shot lead, standing on a tee that I believe is among the handful of moment of truth tee shots in major championship golf. I mean, come on. I mean, that is that special stuff. It just goes to show you that maybe these players, you know, I get the whole concept of the team and the idea of the totality of what they need to be prepared every day. But it also shows that elders in this game can help you not only in real time, but a moment in time with them from 15, 17 years ago can give you comfort and conviction in a moment like that. It's awesome.
Rex, you probably heard some of the banter going on social media, some of the sports channels about Rory McIlroy. And did he have a fair or unfair advantage with his access to Augusta National? You just heard Gary talking about eligible and exempt, which means they all have that opportunity. What's your reaction to what you're hearing?
That's funny. I was just listening to a podcast on my way out of town. I'm heading to Hilton Head from Augusta, and they were having this conversation. And honestly, I rolled my eyes because everyone has the same access. Everyone doesn't have a private jet. I understand that everyone can't send Poppy to drop Poppy off at school, get on a private jet, come up and play a practice round and practice, then fly home for dinner. I get that's difficult if you're going to do that on Delta. It's going to be a much longer day, but you have access to the golf course. That's the beauty of qualifying for the Masters. We do this every single week on the PGA Tour. When someone wins on Sunday, usually the second question after what does it feel like to be a PGA Tour winner is, what does it feel like to go to the Masters, especially if you're going for the first time? I just think Rory took advantage of it better than anyone else. And again, he said it. I love the sound that he just pointed out that I'm not going to do this for every major. You can't realistically take 3 weeks off before every single major championship. But it's certainly interesting going forward, because as soon as he mentioned that, we're all talking about the 2027 PGA Tour schedule and the 2028 Tour schedule and what it might look like. And some of those conversations revolve around the idea that the Tour's thinking about either taking the week off before or after the major championships. I think Rory sent a statement. Maybe the week off is better.
G-Dub, I want to give you a bite of that same apple. The impact of Rory's win in maybe shaping or informing how the PGA Tour may look at its schedule going forward.
Yeah, I think that he was not trying to disparage the events that lead into it. He has been somebody who has gone to both of those, and they have benefited greatly, because we all know that there's a handful of players that truly can motivate people to buy tickets. And he is one of the guys at the top of the marquee. The idea of almost like the Super Bowl, where you play conference championship games, and I know it's not, you know, perfectly analogous to that, and then you give that build where we have turned, or at least Augusta National has turned what this all is into a fortnight, because with the Augusta National Women's Amateur and the Drive, Chip, and Putt, this was not everybody becomes familiar again with Augusta National on Monday of the Masters. No, it starts the middle of the week before. So I think it would be reasonable. It would be interesting to see. Look, I love the idea of that golden ticket, and it doesn't mean that goes away for the players who don't have invitations that are looking for that last win before. That still can be very much in play. I would be completely open to the idea of the week off before, because I tell you what's going to happen, guys, we're going to have these conversations before we get to a Ronimink. If we all think that Rory and Scotty, we already know the truth about Rory, are going to play three signature series events between now and the beginning of next May or this coming May, which is soon enough, it's not happening. And that's a problem.
Hey, Rex, I'm going to ask you this question, but Garrett, I'm going to ask you to jump in on this as well. I'm curious about where Rory McIlroy is right now in the pantheon. Is Rory McIlroy right now top 10 all time?
I'm with Damon. You asked him just in the first block, is he the best European player? Yes, I think full stop, hook the graft, as you would say in the media business when we're writing. Is he in the top 10 players ever in the history of the game? Yes, although I think Jaime Diaz did a really good job of breaking that down. I think it was Saturday morning of sort of pointing out that we can get lost in the modern era in the moment. And certainly I think sometimes things get lost to the sands of time. So I think that's a bigger conversation. I feel like he is. And you look at what he is going to accomplish going forward. One of the conversations that you guys just had is it's interesting that he had this wonderful career early and then went a decade without winning a major championship. The only comp in my mind I could come around to was Tom Brady. There was a point in his career when everyone thought he was washed, that he had this wonderful Hall of Fame career and he was coming to the end. And the only thing he did is went on and had a second Hall of Fame career. I can imagine Rory doing the exact same thing.
Yeah, it is. It's a good point, Rex. There is, and maybe Rory 2.0 was that 11 years. And now that this is 3.0, the cherubic Rory, the bully Rory from 2011 to 14. I think it's important. If we're going to do this, how are we going to have this exercise? Because if we're going to exclude players who did not even know what majors were, but then whether it was retroactively or then bestowed that distinction, well, what are we doing with Walter Hagen? What are we doing with Bobby Jones, who was winning the most important events, two of which were amateur championships? What are we doing with Harry Vardon? The men that Rory just left in that club of five, as I that's a gratuitous plug for my program. it, as far as J.H. Taylor and James Bray, like, what are we doing with these men? We can't expunge them. They can't evaporate. In the modern era, unequivocally, he's a top 10 player. Let me pose this to you, gentlemen. Did he just bump Phil in terms of where he is in line all time?
He did, in my mind, and Matt and I talked about this before the show,
And we disagree.
We disagree. I think the fact that Rory has been number one, has won the money title, not to mention his incredible play on the DP World Tour. He won the career Grand Slam, which obviously Phil did not win the U.S. Open, and now back-to-back in the Masters term. I think it took this Sunday to get him there, but I do have him ever so slightly against over Phil Mickelson. I think both of them are still in the top 10 in my mind, but I do have Rory McIlroy slightly ahead of Phil.
Yeah, to Gary's point, it's funny you brought him up because I've got Walter Hagen and Bobby Jones on my top 10, which has Rory just outside of the top 10. But relative to Phil Mickelson specifically, six major championships and 45 wins in the PGA Tour still, to me, trumps six major championship and 30 wins on the PGA Tour. I remember a conversation I had one time, Gary, with Arnold Palmer. And he was 62 wins on the PGA Tour and seven major championships. And I was talking to him about that. And he said, you know, we need to put more weight on wins. And that meant something. So to me right now, with all that Phil has accomplished, too, I think he's just ahead of Rory McIlroy. And it's just because of gross weight.
Yeah, it's, you know, Phil, oldest major champion. There's bull type associated with that. Rory gets the accelerator because he has that one title that Phil doesn't have, even though Phil was agonizingly close, you know, a historic number of times. Matt, I love the point you made about wins, that we move on from wins very quickly, and then we narrow our focus into these four events. I think, and Damon, I know you're a big believer in a couple things. You know, longevity is a measurement of greatness. That is really, really important because it speaks to something that's hard, more so now maybe than ever, and that is drive, determination. Someone like Justin Rose still putting himself out there to try to cross the line again at 45 years of age with all the trappings and comfort financially you could ever want. Still wanting to be great and then separating yourself. Look, I would say that in any other era, Phil gets to number one. I get the point that Damon's making, but if Tiger doesn't, if he doesn't have to overlap, in his entire career with that, yes, Rory got to one. Do I think Phil was as good as Rory was when he was at his best getting number one? I do. I do.
I mean, with a monsoon of respect here, and you have to respect the history of the game. We just did a whole segment about the idea of the connectors there. The Tom Watson now connects to Rory, who connects to the generation before him. That's what we love the most about the Masters. I mean, this is the great part about that week. But I would challenge everybody on this board, if we're talking about a top 10, the idea that Wimby is going to be a top 10 player in the NBA sooner or later. He's a freak of nature. He's a robot. What he does on the court, he's going to have to bump someone out of their top 10. I would argue the same thing has to happen in golf. Now, is it Phil? Is it Byron Nelson? I don't know who it is. We can sit here and debate that. But look, this thing is fluid. I don't know that you can sit here and make an argument that no, absolutely, the top 10 is locked in. I don't buy that.
These conversations are good. Water cooler talk, bar stool talk, good for the game. Rex and G-Dub, we appreciate your time on this Monday. Stay with us, folks. We continue our conversation and reaction to Rory McIlroy's Masters win. His putting coach, Brad Faxon, taking some time to speak with us when Golf Today returns. Our friend and colleague and Rory's putting coach, Brad Faxon, joins us now. Brad, I can't imagine what it's like to occupy the space you do as a media member and Rory McIlroy's putting coach and kind of moving between those two worlds. How would you describe your satisfaction level on this Monday?
Incredible. Like last year, the Sunday was a thrilling ride. Maybe Rory knows how to raise ratings for himself without really trying to. But, I think Rory did. He's a historian, first and foremost, Damon. And he would know that this sixth major win ties in with Nick Faldo for the best European, the most European major wins. I think he wanted to validate last year's Masters win. He knows and knew that winning back-to-back is very rare. Only three players before, and those three players before him, he knows who they are, too, and how hard that is. But, yeah, very satisfying. I think for Rory, getting to get to that 18th tee with a one-shot lead certainly was a little bit less stressful than last year playing the last hole with Rose only one shot back. And, of course, he still made it exciting with that tee shot on 18.
Brad, you have so much experience yourself at Augusta National. At what point, especially on Sunday, when you were watching Rory, did it even make you nervous? Be it a putt, maybe it was from coming off the side of the green on 16. When were you watching something going like, ooh, this could be tough?
Well, it always is tough there. I mean, right out of the box, you have one of the hardest holes on the golf course with the first hole. I think the par threes, particularly on Sunday, certainly three of the first four are as hard as they get with iron play. And Rory said, thankfully, that some of his best iron player and best iron shots were today. But, when you have those quality of players in front of you, and look, Justin Rose was putting on a charge. Scheffler is always dangerous, but he looked like, I don't know how his putt on 17 stayed out. And, Rory still had to overcome adversity on the front nine with a double bogey on four and hit it over the green on six, which is almost impossible to, get it up and down from where he was. I think, we keep talking about players' resilience, Rory's resilience, and he's an unbelievable bounce back stat guy. And what he kept doing after he made a bogey or a double and coming back from that is remarkable.
Well, he's also a remarkably hard worker, as you know, but he had a very unique run-up to the first major of the year. Jack didn't like to play the week before. Neither did Tiger. Phil sometimes did. In fact, won by 13 shots the week before, winning his second green jacket in 06. What was the value of Rory not playing on the PGA Tour ahead of the Masters and instead flying up to Augusta and really focusing on his short game and putting and getting comfortable on the golf course?
Well, typically, Rory wouldn't want to have 3 weeks off prior to playing maybe any tournament, but particularly the major championship like the Masters. And I think he was being very conservative after he had to withdraw from the Arnold Palmer Invitational. Remember Saturday on the range, he was still sore from something that happened in his workout that morning. And I think he chose, hey, let's not try and make it any worse. Took that time off. And, you know, I think I said on the air with you, Damon, last week at, on Live From, he's a masterclass in the press room when he gives a press conference, brutally honest. And he said, look, I don't like the three tournaments leading up to the Masters. I'm going to be better off if I can go up there. And, you know, he has enough friends that are members at Augusta National. And now that he has a green jacket, he can go anytime he wants and play and practice. But I think what really helped him, both you guys, going up there and playing with his friends, he plays casually, but he plays from the back tees. He tries to have a match with whomever he's playing with and shoot a good score and tries to get into a playing state while he's there. I think the Alistair McKenzie, Bobby Jones golf course is complicated. Every time a player goes there, they say, I saw something new. Even if it's not new, they saw something that is a reminder of where a shot should or shouldn't go. And I can even say putts like Rory made yesterday in Sunday's round on 7 was very, very similar to the putt he had last year on Sunday's round that he left short. So just, you know, being able to be out there and learn and see things, I'm sure was very, very helpful. Never mind the fact that one of the days he was there, he shot 29 on the front nine, and I believe he shot an unofficial 63. That's pretty good.
Pretty good indeed. Have you heard some of the banter now after this Masters, Brad, where people are saying, did he have a fair advantage or an unfair advantage, as it were, by getting that much practice in advance? Do you think people truly understand that if you qualify for the Masters that you can go up and play Augusta National?
Well, I don't know why anybody would say that's unfair. Anybody that's in the field certainly has a chance to go up there and play if they have the time to do it. Yeah, and he's in a good position. He can skip tournaments and go up there and play, and he has made a bunch of friends that would want to play with him that are members there. And like I said, he's earned that right. And if anybody's going to sound bittersweet about that, I don't even want to listen to that. But yeah, he went up there sometimes just up and back in a day. Other times he spent the night and had some friends with him. I know he's with Shane Lowry on one of the trips. So yeah, that's fine with me.
Hey, Brad, by the way, are you doing a subtle flex on us with that, with the tumbler you're using today?
Well, you know, everybody likes to pick up gear when they go up to the Masters. You know, it's a machine there, and it justifiably so. But I got a nice couple little cups. My wife drinks a coffee out of a Masters mug every single morning. I grabbed one of those little gnomes in a Mahjong set.
So
yeah, I'm a big collector. I got a couple shirts to wear, and yeah, that logo is a world-class logo. And you know, every time I put something on that has this logo, I'm going to be thinking about Rory, back-to-back wins, some of the putts he made on that final line, the up and downs, like you said, just incredible.
Yeah, Fax and I actually went shopping one day after our show with Noda.
That's right.
Begay. We got a lot of
What'd
good
you
stuff.
Get?
Well, I got a bunch of stuff. I got Tumblr as well.
You usually coffee mug for me.
I did. Fax, listen, it's so fun to watch Rory now, but you remember the questions a couple of years ago at the U.S. Open, Pinehurst, and those are very tricky greens, and the short putts that he missed coming home were by no means easy. But I'm curious, was there any work you had to do physically, mentally, to get past those moments that for a while were a pretty robust talking point?
Well, that was a tough spot there. And you mentioned right as we started the show, being on the broadcast and then being a coach is hard. And the 16th hole when he missed that putt, that was an even hole. I was working alongside Brandel Chamblee, and I was working with Mike Tirico, and Brandel was working with Dan Hicks. And Tommy Roy, our producer, says, Brad, in my ear, he said, Brad, tell the world why Rory missed that putt. And that puts you in an uncomfortable position, you know, because I have a duty to the audience to give my opinion on why he missed that. But I also am like, hey, whatever I say here, Rory's going to hear this because he's going to obviously listen to this broadcast. It's hard. And listen, I'm lucky enough to be able to be with one of the most gifted players that's ever played the game. And he's beyond talented. So in my journey through this coaching part post-playing career, I know what it's like to do this. I know what it's like to feel like that under the gun. I know what it's like to miss I have heartbreaking misses at both Ryder Cups we lost that I never forgot. I've missed short putts with chances to win major championships. Certainly not like that at a U.S. Open or a Masters, but I think he appreciates that. But at the same time, my job is to help Rory play better and kind of get out of the way. You know, I see the coaching models change so much from my generation where a lot of the coaches are at every event. A lot of the coaches stay there for the week. And a lot of these great players who have great coaches can play well. But I think you have to know the person, the personality. I don't think Rory needs somebody looking over his shoulder every time he hits a shot. And we witnessed that Saturday night after his third round when he didn't play well. He went out with his caddy and started thinking about how do I make this ball stop going too far left? And he made some changes on his own. I think we've worked long enough now, 8 or so years, where he has his feels and thoughts that have worked very consistently, I would say, for the last 7 or 8 years. He had his best putting statistics of his career last year at the age of 36. And last week, you heard what he said at the Masters. His putting and chipping were outstanding. And I would say, you know, I'm proudest about, for Rory, the important putts that he made on the back nine. The par putt on 11 to keep the momentum going there from 8 feet. You know, we look at strokes gained stuff all the time, and I'll say this, you know, to the end of days, a putt on Friday afternoon when you're missing the cut by 10 shots that's an 8-footer gets measured the same statistically as that putt Rory made on Sunday in the back nine of the Masters. There's no comparison, is there? And then that allowed him, making that par putt on 11, allowed him to have some confidence when he got to the 12th tee to hit what I think is the best iron shot of the week for Rory, the closest shot of the day on the 12th hole, and to pour that putt in, which was a left-to-right putt, unlike the putt on number 11, which was right-to-left. And that allowed him to hit the best drive that he hit all week long on any par five, that drive on 13, although it went just through the fairway, that was the best drive he hit. It gave him a mid iron into that green. He went on to birdie 13 and made the putt after Cameron Young missed his birdie putt. So there became a little match play there. I just think that what Rory's been able to do mentally is phenomenal. And that's stuff that, you know, we talk about, but he does it, you know. And I asked him, last year, after his great putting year, I said, Rory, what do you think made 2025 a great year for you on the putting greens? And he didn't just blurt out an answer. He thought about it for a second. He goes, acceptance. It's acceptance when I miss a putt. It's acceptance when I make a putt. And I think people want something, you know, I don't know if what the word would be something that they could go try themselves that maybe, you know, I made more four footers. No, it's acceptance. And that's part of, you know, being a great player, the resilience that these top players have bouncing back, because you get beat up all the time and you got to stand back up. And nobody's done it better the last few years than Rory McIlroy.
Well, Brad, first of all, congratulations to you, too, on his coach for this another remarkable accomplishment in his career. And we thank you very much, my friend, for your time.
Thank you, Matt. You know, just being able to be around Rory is an honor and one of the greatest parts of my golfing life, because he's such a gentleman. He's such a good man. And I'm not so sure that the end of his major streak is over yet. That's that's worth talking about.
Indeed. We are delighted to welcome Todd Lewis and Steve Sands now to the show. Todd, I want to start with you, if I may, respectfully. The interview with Rory was exceptional. Could you take us behind the curtain? What's it like in that moment when you interview major champions, when there has to be all kinds of commotion around them at that moment, and yet you're able to sit there and get everything settled down and get from them such moving emotional content?
Matt, first, thank you for that. It's always a joy and a spirit of service to bring the viewers something different that maybe they had not seen in the press conference or maybe they saw on the telecast. I mean, first off, it's an opportunity for us to talk to the champion after they've literally taken a breath, because after they win, there's an immediate ceremony in Rory's case, the butler's butler cabin, and then the green jacket ceremony, and then straight to the to the press building to meet with the media. And then after that, he has dinner with the members of Augusta National. And then finally, it seems like at that moment after all that, Rory or the champion gets to take a breath and kind of like really look back at what they accomplished. And you talk about the moments that were great that made Rory McIlroy, in this case, a two-time champion, but you also get to kind of peel back and, more importantly, look not necessarily at strategy and mechanics, but also, more importantly, emotions of what this has done for him, not only looking backwards, but also looking forward. So, I mean, it's a chance. In this case, I will say, in the comparison for Rory McIlroy and the emotions and everything that he had in this Masters victory compared to last year. Last year, there was exuberance because, again, there was a weight that was lifted. This one was a complete understanding of what last year meant, and there was incredible joy in having his family there and understanding that, like, I've got many more wonderful things ahead of me. There is no Everest in front of me. I am infinite and what I can do in my career, in my life. And I think that was the biggest message that Rory sent to me and everyone watching with that interview.
Steve, I want to ask you, you know, last year's headline kind of wrote itself. It was the accomplishment, the career Grand Slam, sixth man to do it. In your mind, you know, besides joining Jack, Nick, and Tiger, which is an incredibly hard thing to do, and more exclusive, at least by number of feet, what's the deeper meaning of Rory's victory in your mind?
Well, I think if you want to make a horse racing analogy, Danny, because I know you're a big sports fan, I think Rory stepped up in class yesterday and last week at Augusta. He got his sixth major championship, which ties Nick Faldo for the most of any European player. And I think he's now the greatest European player of all time. Jaime Diaz mentioned that on our set last week on Live from the Masters. The caveat and the, you know, the breaking of the tie, if you will, is that he's won the career Grand Slam. Nick Faldo won three British and three Masters. So I think there's that. And then if you look at it in a historical context, he's got to be up there. You know, Trevino's got six, and Faldo's got six. You got to figure, you know, Mickelson's got six. Mickelson doesn't have the career Grand Slam. Rory does. He's got all those Ryder Cup hero moments. I think Rory has put himself in a category of 10th, 11th, 12th greatest player in the history of the sport. And I think he has a long way to go here at only 37 years of age. So I think yesterday was a massive step forward for Rory in a historical context. And winning back-to-back Masters is something that just doesn't happen very often. And he didn't do it with his A game. Tiger used to say that all the time. That's a scary thought for the rest of the world. I also think it's great that we might have now what we've always wanted to have after the Tiger and Phil era is Scottie, perhaps, and Rory for the next 5 or 6 years going at it. I think that would be so much fun for the world of golf.
Hey, Todd, let's start with you on this, but Steve, please jump in quickly on it as well. When we think back on the way that Masters are remembered, especially in a visual medium like we're in right now, say Jack Nicklaus with the great Vern Lundquist call, maybe, yes, sir, or even Vern again in 2005 with Tiger from off the green at 16, of Phil 2010 out of the pine straw, right? All these iconic images that spoke to that particular Masters. What will be the one iconic image from this Masters that will live forever?
Not everyone saw this. I was fortunate to see it with my eyes, but it was shown on Golf Channel, and I hope someone or everyone saw this, is the fact that when he acknowledged his father, Jerry, and his mom, Rosie, I mean, because you heard Rory in that interview there, as he reflects on his life and everything that he has accomplished, and believe me, it is in a fishbowl. Steve and I see it all the time out there. But for him to do all these wonderful things and reach these goals and to understand that it is foundational that his parents not only shaped him to be a wonderful player, but a great person. They took him to all those junior tournaments. They flew him to the United States to play in some prestigious junior tournaments. They were by his side. They were always optimistic with him. They were uplifting. And when he was down, you know, they were there for him. And for him to acknowledge them and reveal, Rory, the emotion to have them there to witness him winning the Masters, which they were not there for last year. To me, that's the lasting impression. If you get a chance, if you're at home and you did not see that Masters Green Jacket ceremony, YouTube it, Google it, do whatever. I mean, you really do sense the pride and the love that he has for his parents.
Yeah, a couple of things I would go with. I would topple onto what Todd just said about Jerry and Rose. If anybody's been around the world of golf, like we are privileged to be inside the ropes and around these guys, Jerry and Rose are the best, man. They're out there. They're supporting their son. It's just so much fun to be around them, to talk about anything with them, not just about their son or about golf. Just being around Rosie and Jerry is great. For them to witness that in person, I thought it was an incredible, indelible image. And for here to hear Rory speak about his parents was very, very cool. A couple things. 15 years ago, he won his first major at Congressional. The PGA was not played in May that year. It was played in August. They switched it around a few years ago. So the next major after he blew that four-shot lead and had such heartbreak at the 2011 Masters, he went on and won a Congressional by 8 shots. He then won an Open Championship and a couple of PGAs all the way through 2014. And I was talking to his father, Jerry, one time, and Jerry looked at me and said, "These are all great, but the big one's in April." And he was talking about the Masters, and it took him 11 years to get there last year, and now he's gone back-to-back. So I'll go with what Todd said about him recognizing his mom and dad and all the sacrifices they made for him to be able to be the best that he could possibly be on the golf course. But the one golf course moment I will take away.
Come on.
It sure looked like, Matt, that he pushed that shot at 12. I don't think so. I think that he was being aggressive and took it over the right side of that bunker on purpose because he just felt great. Remember, he made that huge par save at 11. That is a massive, massive par save and a huge moment because when you walk up that hill as a Masters champion to 12 and all those people and that famous par 3, Matt and Damon, we all know what it's like. Rory McIlroy was getting a massive ovation. If he misses that putt, he's got a little head shake there and maybe doesn't get that kind of love from the patrons. Then he steps up, smiles at Harry afterwards when he hit that shot. I think he was being aggressive there and aiming not at 12 o'clock over the bunker, but aiming at about 12:30 or 1 o'clock. He got away with it. He pulled it off. It was a great, great shot, and he made the putt. I think 11 and 12 right there were the moments when Rory McIlroy said, "You know what? This is my Masters. Now you've got to come after me from this point on."
That was the turning point, and then piped that drive on the par 5 13th to follow, one of the great moments in the 90th edition of the Masters.
Back on Golf Today, celebrations are underway in Northern Ireland for Rory McIlroy's second green jacket. They're popping the bubbly, as you just saw, at the Hollywood Wine Bar. In Skinner's Bakery, they're showing off their biscuits with Rory's face on the front. Now, speaking of a different Hollywood, this one in California, actor Matthew McConaughey posting this on social media. "Put your own green jacket on, sir. Sprint out the gates and then hold on the way home." Wow, congratulations. Sleep well tonight. Ewan Murray of The Guardian joins us right now. So, Ewan, where do we start with Rory McIlroy? We know his leadership position in the game at large. We know the leadership role that he plays, for example, in the Ryder Cup for the European team. But now we have Rory McIlroy as a player, and he wins his second consecutive Masters after, you know, the career Grand Slam last year and all that it means. What are you hearing from back home in terms of Rory McIlroy having done this again?
Well, there's great excitement back home. There's always been recognition of what an outstanding golfer and ambassador Rory is. But I think this is just a new chapter of his career. I think he waited so long for that 2025 Masters. It was a painful wait, a frustrating wait at times. But when he broke that seal, I thought it would mean a plot twist, and it has. And winning the Masters again, I think, just sets us up for a really exciting spell where the sky is the limit now for Rory in terms of, you know, major wins and achievements in the game, because that gorilla, you know, came off his back last year at Augusta National. So I just think 12 months ago is so relevant in terms of what he has done this time at Augusta. And I think he'll just keep doing more and more in terms of, you know, landmark achievements in this sport. I believed he was Europe's greatest golfer of all time anyway, because I believe that the Grand Slam means you've passed every examination, you know, going. But I think going past Seve Ballesteros and matching Nick Faldo's major tally just further endorses that point.
You and I agree with you in that sentiment, but it was interesting to me to hear Rory say he felt like he needed to win. Not that he needed to win, but at least he didn't want last year to be viewed in some way as a fluke, which shocked me. But the second green jacket, the significance of joining Jack and Sir Nick and Tiger back-to-back, if he didn't need it, what's the significance of him finding yet even a smaller table than the one he occupies as a Grand Slam winner?
Yeah, well, Damon, that's fascinating. The psychology of that is fascinating to me because, you know, for a spell yesterday in that front nine, he's struggling a little bit. The time he gets to the turn, you know, Justin Rose had a two-shot lead at one point. It would be easy for Rory just to shrug his shoulders and say, I did this last year, I've got this Grand Slam, I don't really need this much. But he went the other way. And we use the word a lot, resilience around Rory. But it's that ongoing motivation to prevail and succeed at the highest level of the game. I think that's, he's due immense credit for that because sports people of lesser standing, you know, in the fourth round of the Masters, when things are a bit tough, when you've won it already, you're a Grand Slam winner, I think they would shrug their shoulders and let it go. And Rory went the other way. And that fascinates me and I think is a cause to give him immense praise.
As an esteemed journalist, at the end of play on Friday, when Rory had a commanding lead, how were you able to shift from the Rory that looked like he couldn't be beat to getting to a point where Rory very much looked like he was beat until that comeback?
Yeah, I just think Augusta National makes you uncertain. You know, as a journalist, I would never call a Masters after 36 holes, 54 holes, 63 holes. I just think the nature of that golf course means it was always dangerous to say that he had that one. And obviously Saturday was a struggle for him and bits of Sunday were a struggle for him. And you know, on that 18th tee, when he cracks the ball into the forest on the right-hand side, I mean, it was a heart and a mouth job for everyone, not least us writing for UK print deadlines, but that's another story. But I just think the nature of the Masters and the nature of Augusta meant it was unwise to call that on Friday. And equally, when he had a bad day on Saturday, given what we know about Rory, it was unwise to think he couldn't roar back and win. That's the nature. I think that, you know, the privilege of watching Rory McIlroy is not all that he wins, which is good enough. It's the way that he does it. It's theatric, it's storied, it's dramatic. There's electricity wherever he plays, wherever he goes. And he's compelling viewing. You can't take your eyes off him. And you know, this Masters, like the last Masters, epitomised that.
Now, speaking of the last Masters, the consensus is that the best shot he hit was on Sunday at 15. Jim Nance called it the shot of a lifetime, the approach into the par 5 Firethorn. What's the best shot in your mind that he hit in 2026?
Boring answer, but probably that tee shot at 12, I think, is the obvious place to go. And also interesting how he explained that. And you know, going back to 2009, he played a practice round with Tom Watson. Tom gave him a lesson about the wind. You know, wait until you feel the wind is where you think it should be before you hit the shot. And, you know, 2009, long time ago, Rory was a different person, different golfer. But advice from Tom Watson, even back then, still resonates. And you know, that's what he sticks by. That yesterday was a tricky tee shot. I was down there. The wind was gusting. He's obviously got, you know, a lot of pressure in that situation. So to pull that shot out, that 9-iron at that moment, it's an obvious answer, but I think that was the key shot for him in that round, and it was a wonderful tee shot on 12.
Ewan, you have had the chance to cover Rory through the entirety of his career, and we had the early Rory that won those four major championships and looked like he could break all the records in the game of golf if he continued at such a pace. And now we have this Rory coming off those two consecutive Masters victories. How has the Rory, the young Lion that could not be stopped seemingly at that time, and the Rory now, how have they changed?
There's still a bit of the young lion in there, I think. I think we still see traces of it in the way he plays and the way he speaks and the way he acts. He has matured like the rest of us. His game is slightly different, but I still think his game is at his best and is most compelling when he's aggressive and when he goes for things. And at Augusta National, that ultimately has served him well. Yeah, I think about that a lot because I think in many ways he's a very different person. His life's in a very different place. But when I watch him play, I still draw parallels to that young kid who burst onto the scene. I think one of many amazing things about Rory is his competitive longevity. You look at the world rankings from 2014 when he won the last of those majors until last year's Masters. Look at the change. And Rory, through all these years, has stayed, you know, even when he wasn't winning majors, he has stayed at the summit of the sport. And the change in the rankings and the change in the makeup of tournaments shows you how difficult that is to do. He won't get much credit for this, and it probably doesn't matter, you know, because he will value Ryder Cup wins and major wins. But his ability to remain so relevant and so competitive at the summit of golf for so long, I think is one of many incredible facets of his career.
You and I'd be remiss if I didn't ask you about Justin Rose. It was a different Sunday in 2026 compared to 2025, where he said he felt like he played better in the playoff. Obviously made 10 birdies in the final round a year ago. How did you kind of chronicle his lead and then loss of lead yesterday at Augusta?
Yeah, I felt for Justin. Anyone would feel for Justin watching that. On the 10th tee, he was in a very, very strong position. That second shot into 11, I think, just seemed to shake him. You know, obviously then a bogey from there, bad shot into 12. And what will sting there is I wouldn't say he had the Masters in the palm of his hand, but he was the hunted at that point. He was in a great position and he let that slip. And that will sting. And I think, candidly, you have to wonder, will he have many more chances in that tournament? I still think, for example, there's a good chance he could win an Open Championship. But Augusta, I think it's fair to ask how many more times he will be in that commanding position. And, you know, and so for him to not get it done, I know will hurt and sting Justin. And it's just one of these sporting things that was difficult to watch.
Well, the storylines never disappoint at Augusta National. Ewan, we appreciate a few moments. Safe travels home. We will speak to you soon.
Thank you.